Ah, what a beautiful winter morning.
Is it snowy?
It's not snowy, but it's definitely the worm has turned, as they say. All of a sudden, it is cold now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. I still don't have my winter blood on yet, but it's getting there.
Your winter blood?
Yeah. You know, to the point where it's like, I look outside and it's like, oh, it's 24 degrees. I don't need a coat.
Mm-hmm. No, not yet.
It'll happen.
I am still in, you know, no socks around the house, t-shirt, and then I complain that it's chilly, and my wife looks at me and goes, really? You know, mm-hmm. put on some, she has three layers and a cape over that, and she's right. just walking around all covered. No, I just, and then I run out for, oh, just a quick errand. I can just put a coat on over my t-shirt, and it's unpleasant.
Are you going through male menopause?
Going through.
Flashes?
Going through. My third book is about to be published.
Oh, okay, good. Good. Phew.
Going through. As I sit here and drink coffee and wash it down with amlodipine, I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know. Old, cold people. And then I was having a conversation the other day with a couple of folks about, you know, eventual retirement and all that. And one of them saying, you know, a good friend of mine who's like, yep, when we sell the house, we're getting in the RV and we're just driving. That's going to be life. Mm-hmm. And this other friend of mine said, yeah, you know, we're not going to do the normal go south thing and stay warm. I know my wife and we're going north. And I'm like, oh, man, I think I'm in the same boat.
Oof.
I'm never going to see the sun again.
Give me that. Where are you going? Greenland?
So, no, Maine. Close enough.
Oh, God.
So speaking of that little outing, I was at trivia night the other night.
Of course.
Now there are five rounds of this trivia night that they do, and it is very, very biased toward young people. We very rarely know what we're talking about. We're always asking where the World War II trivia questions are.
got anything references the History Channel?
and it's nothing. So this week, and they'll after every round, they announce the top two teams. This week, after round one, we were in first place. I get home, and of course, after that, it got bad. But we got home, and I looked at my wife. I said, did the brewery call here to ask you what the perfect category would be for me? And she thought I was serious. And I'm like, no. And she said, well, what was the first category? Well, they announce it, and the whole table looks at me.
Marvel characters.
Oh, it's better than that. Comic books turned into television shows.
Oh, hell.
they couldn't finish asking the questions, and I'm writing down the answers. It was It was brilliant. I think I found my thing.
that's your groove now, huh? You're that guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm that guy. And
what? And you're surprised by this? Everyone who's listening now is like, duh.
Yeah. We would have been pinging you on the Discord to ask you to answer questions if we were in that situation. I repeatedly said, I'm not sure if I should be proud of this or embarrassed. And to all my friends' credit, they said, own it, man. Just own it.
Just own it. Yep.
So I was, I had to explain to all of them that Batman's butler has a last name.
It does.
They're like, but he's just Alfred. I'm like, no. There's a backstory. There's stuff there. So it was good. It was good. I was proud of myself and mortified at the same time. And it didn't help that it was the beginning, so I was barely into my first beer. If I'd been three beers in, I would have been like standing on the table going, I'm the king!
Well, at least it was that in the category. You said that and not male menopause.
No.
I would have been like, oh, all right.
No, not male menopause. But again, that third book is out, and you can find me on Kickstarter for the third book. And it's called I Just Can't Stop Complaining.
Uh-huh. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Is that good? So one other thing before we jump into, I want to say. So we got an email this week from one of our patrons. And I know I got your message back when I sent it to you. It just warmed my heart, and I think it warmed yours too.
Totally.
And it was just a, hey, you guys were great. This was actually from Cody, who we were making fun of a couple episodes ago because we didn't know if he was a guy or a girl.
Right.
And it was, and in candor, I still don't know. I'm trying to think about the email. I still don't know.
The email does not provide you any clues.
No gender clues in the email whatsoever.
Well done, Cody. Well played.
So I'm sure Cody, is laughing again right now, but just sent us a wonderful note about enjoying the podcast and enjoying, you know, laughing at our back and forth about him on the last episode. And or I just got to say to
or her, they.
And I just want to say to all of our listeners, we get so tickled and excited when we hear from people that are listening, because we still, even though we know we've got listeners, sometimes it still feels like we're talking to each other.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So thank you for that, Cody. You made our day. And
Please send mail.
Send mail. Please send us notes. It's not like we're in prison and need contact with the outside world, but it does feel that way sometimes.
It does, yes. Mm-hmm. Podcasting prison.
Yes. Yep. Just talking into the void here. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm sad. we love our listeners. Thank you all.
The life we've chosen.
Yes. Has it chosen us, really, though?
Yeah. Well, I let's not get too metaphysical here.
Okay.
All right. Let's get to the getting. What are we talking about today?
Get to the getting. What are we talking about here? So, yeah, as usual, we're about 6.5 minutes in of gibberish. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is another episode of... We read it so you don't have to. Kind of, sorta. Because this is more of... I was reading something that was unrelated to beer and the beer industry, and it just made me think about things from a different perspective. So this is a book that's been around for quite a while. This is not a new book, and I'm in the middle of it at the moment, so I haven't even finished it yet. There might be more to come. And it's called The Power of Habit. It's by Charles Duhigg. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And the book is all about the way we sort of train ourselves to do certain things repetitively. And very Pavlovian, there are rewards we either look for or we're accustomed to getting for doing certain things. And it's about how marketing agencies sort of use that against us. They use the way our brains work and our repetitive brains work in order to get us to buy things. In particular, to break habits and to buy new things that maybe we didn't used to buy before. How do they insert themselves into our habit loop? So the particular chapter I just read, the central concept is about Target. And the chapter is called Target Knows What You Want to Buy Before You Do.
A Target like the store Target.
Target the store.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to...
Like Target shooting.
Oh, okay.
Like you have a target on you.
No. Target the store. Target the store. So they sell everything.
Yes.
And if you think about, when you think about the way data works and the way Target and supermarkets work, and I'm sure everyone is aware of this at this point, but anytime you sign up for a store credit card or you have a customer number that gets you a discount and Target has their red card, you get 5% off, they funnel all that back to a customer ID number. Target knows everything you have purchased.
They're watching you. They're mm-hmm. watching you.
and that's why when you get, coupons in the mail, or maybe they're printed out at the register sometimes, and it's like, I do buy milk all the time, but not that brand of milk. Target knows that. Mm-hmm. That is very specifically for you. It's not a coincidence that you're getting that coupon. So the example they talk about in here, which I think is fascinating that Target managed to do, is that they went through all of their data and looked at they started with their baby registry. Now, not everyone signs up for their baby registry, but they took the people who sign up for their baby registry and then went through their historical purchasing data, because they knew these people were pregnant, because they're if you're not pregnant and you're on a baby registry, you got a whole other set of problems. Mm-hmm. They went back through all that and they were able to determine the pivot points that would indicate someone has just become pregnant. They start buying healthier foods, certain types of vitamins.
Is there a pickle to ice cream ratio there?
There probably is. Sweatpants prior to buying maternity pants. Mm. So things that hadn't been bought before and all of a sudden created a trigger point, and they became frighteningly accurate at predicting pregnancy. Because what you can't do is say, ooh, they bought a stroller. Because you know what? Someone who's bought nothing else and just bought a stroller, they're going to a baby shower.
Right, right.
So they took what they knew, which was folks that they knew were pregnant because of the registry list, and kind of backtracked into the data, and they were able to figure out with terrifying accuracy when people were pregnant. And they actually there's one story in the book of them sending a baby catalog to a 17-year-old girl whose father walked into the store irate, yelling at the manager. And the manager would, you know, what are you doing? You know, what are you sending baby stuff to my daughter? Da-da-da-da-da. What's wrong with you? And the store, I guess the regional supervisor or whatever, called the family like a week later to apologize again. And the father kind of sheepishly said, well, apparently there's some things going on in my house I wasn't aware of. So you weren't wrong.
Snap.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine finding out from Target that your teenage daughter is pregnant?
Oh, by the way, your daughter's pregnant.
Wow. Stunning. Stunning examples.
That is astonishing and frightening.
Mm-hmm. And so believable. So believable. It's data. They have all that data. And the thing about pregnancy, the reason they went after this in particular, is they said there is no consumer more profitable than a pregnant family, because they have no time, they are exhausted, they have no filter. So if they normally went to the supermarket for eggs and milk and orange juice, but they're going through Target for the baby-related things they need anyway, and they see milk and eggs and orange juice, they're just going to buy it there. Mm-hmm. The convenience factor is quadrupled for that. So that is a well-known, extremely profitable population. And if you can suck them in, it's huge.
Maybe I'm pregnant.
Okay.
I've got nothing for that. You've just described me.
Just because you're lazy and you want your eggs in one place?
Exactly. Yeah. I just want, don't make me go. Look, I don't eat any food unless it's in bar form or frozen because I ain't got time for that.
Do you mean energy bar or sitting at the bar?
Well, that both? Would fall into the prepared for me category.
Okay.
So that is also a thing. But if I'm like actually feeding myself in like energy bar form, protein bars.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm a horribly lazy consumer of food.
Oh, see, and I'm the one who spends 12 hours smoking a brisket.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah.
So the reason I wanted to talk about this is that I'm reading all of this, and I'm thinking about my local brewery down the road, who has none of this information. And
I wouldn't think there'd be very many pregnant people going into the brewery, but that's just me.
So not helpful. So not helpful. I happened to read this chapter the day after my winning round one at trivia. Mm. And we're getting ready to leave that night and close the place, because that's what my little group does. And I was talking to the owner, and we were talking again about the questions and how they're just so out of our comfort zone. And we brought a friend with us who was younger than us, and she had some input as well. But we need some 16-year-olds to help answer these questions. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And we said to him, and he's older than we are, they just don't. You know, the questions just are not geared toward us. And he said, yeah, we're looking at other trivia companies so we can get a little more of a well-rounded question base. So we said, what's your population? Who comes in here? And he said, it's all over the map. It's every age group, everything you can possibly imagine. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the response of someone who's looking around the room and hasn't actually done research.
Right.
So then the next day, I read this chapter all about all of this data that Target has, that the supermarkets have, and that's information they can use when it comes to, Budweiser.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're sold in arenas like that. But what does your brewery do? What does your local brewery do to understand their customer base and think about the profitability implications of having that kind of information on your customers?
Well, and you're talking about, I'm sitting here thinking about my world, my day slave job in the supply chain world is leading versus trailing indicators, and mm-hmm. which ones are you following? And I think probably if we were to sample 100, craft brewers or brew pubs or whatever, we would find that the vast majority of them, 99% probably, are all reactionary off of trailing indicators. And if that is your the tools that you're using and the indicators you're using, trailing meaning these are the things that you're noticing that have already happened. So you've missed any opportunity to craft a potential future. And that has massive impacts in the supply chain world. But anyway, that's where my head is right now as you're telling the story.
Interesting. Oh, that is interesting. Yeah, it just, so what do you do as a little guy? I mean, there are, I was thinking about things like mug clubs and all that. You get a little bit of information on your customers and you do know who those people are, but other than word of mouth, other than anecdotal, hey, did you like this beer? Did you not like that beer? What's selling faster than that? What can you do as the little guy to get some more information and really understand how to make those larger moves?
As you just mentioned, mug clubs and that sort of thing, where you're engaging a core set of patrons, that will skew your data. Because those people are outliers. They're on the tails of your normal distribution. So really, what are you focusing on? You're focusing on one standard deviation away from the norm. That's what you're trying to capture the most people under that curve, right? Yep. So how do you do that? And that's a fantastic question. And I don't know. How do they do it?
This could be a short episode, apparently.
That's it, folks. Greg read it, so you don't have to.
That's all we got.
But, well, let's see. Let me think of the people that I know. A company like New Glarus, which is a large craft brewery. They're not regional scale, but they're certainly large. Mm-hmm. The 200 to 400,000 barrel range. I know they do market analysis, right? They have people on staff. That's what they do. They're looking at what beers sold where and how much of theirs is in bottles versus in cans versus on tap and off premise and all that good kind of stuff. So they've reached a critical mass where having those people at hand is not only valuable and profitable, but a necessity because they can't, at their scale, they can't guess. They've also achieved a bit of the notoriety and brand awareness and all that good kind of stuff. But still, so has Bud, right? Everybody knows who they are.
Sure.
But they're still collecting these data. But then I look at somebody like The Vintage, who if you're on the Discord, you see my various pictures from there frequently. They have four locations in Madison. And the data they take and look at is what beer is selling at the pint level. And I know that they also have information on like flights and what beer is being sampled more often versus pints being consumed. But again, those are all trailing indicators.
Yep.
That's all post-activity. So how do you take that data or those data from all those trailing indicators of what people have done and turn them into leading indicators so that you can pivot and make some expectations? Let's say you're seeing, okay, well, crossing my fingers, I'm going to be optimistic here. I'm seeing these hazy IPA sales just really plummet. So maybe I shouldn't make any more of those. optimism. This is a new James.
No, this is just you trying to subtly get things into people's brains that are not true.
What was that? You're let it out. See, now they're going to be aware we're doing this. I have to cut this part out. But anyway, look, so those trailing indicators of what people's habits are, what their consumer preference is, it's extremely, extremely tempting to take that and say, okay, I need to do more of this then. So more of the same, basically, because you're looking at what is selling versus what's not selling and saying, I want to do more of that. That's very tempting to do that. But
right.
What you do, you pigeonhole yourself into, you are throwing fuel on the fire of a trend, potentially, right? So as opposed to saying, what are my people actually, observing the customer base coming in and looking for other indicators that might tell you that instead of following with more of the same just because your sales numbers on that category or higher, what do those people actually want? And right. Those are leading indicators, and that's a much harder to get, but potentially way more valuable.
True. Because to get your trailing indicators, all you have to look at is volume. Mm-hmm. Volume of what sold. Whatever sold the most, that's what's selling the most. Make more of what's selling the most. And that took 8 seconds, and we just did a market research study.
Well, a pretty solid leading indicator that people might be aware of is seasonality, right? Mm-hmm. So if you listen to the Backyard Brew Farm and become a patron to do so, we tend to talk about those beer styles or beer ingredients that are seasonal, because that's just what that podcast is about. Well, talk about holiday beers. Well, brewers know this is coming up, and that's what consumers prefer. Pumpkin beers, for God's sakes, right? Those are leading indicators. They know they're coming. They know that to some extent, trailing indicators from previous years told us that people like these pumpkin beers during the autumn, not so much in May. So therefore, it becomes a thing, right? So they can plan for it. They know how to market it, and they can be proactive in their market engagement, as opposed to waiting until November 14th and looking at your tap list, be like, wow, these pumpkin beers sold like crazy. Let's make more of those.
You just gave me a fantastic idea, by the way.
Okay, great. I do this all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm your muse.
I want to continue on your line of questioning here, but I want to come back to the fantastic idea you just gave me.
Okay.
Yes, that is the perfect leading indicator, because it's seasonal, and you know that pent-up demand is going to be there. Mm-hmm. You just know it's coming. The only way I can think of with this kind of data to create a real trend analysis other than just volume is you've got to look at repeatability. You've got to look at what people buy repetitively and not once and then don't drink again. And granted, that's going to factor into what sells the most as well, because they're buying it repetitively, therefore that's selling more. But you need to be able to figure out who, on an individualized basis, if they looked at my history, and I'm part of the Coaster Club at Reverie, so they have my history, they will see the beers that I have had once and never again. They will see the ones that I have every single time I'm there. And that builds a picture, not only just of me, but of my type of person. So if they see that, 60% of what I drink when I'm there is their oatmeal stout, and every third beer I have instead of an oatmeal stout is I have their wit beer. They can come to a conclusion, if they see that often, that, hey, okay, the oatmeal stout people are also the wit beer people. We've got to make sure we have one or the other on tap at all times, because if they're both off, there's nothing for this guy to drink. And you need to sort of cluster those things together. But again, it's the repeatability. Mm-hmm. They'll see that I drank their double IPA once. That should tell them something, that I only drank it once.
Okay. So what's your idea?
What's my idea? The other idea. Yeah. So here's my other idea. You were talking about the pent-up demand for pumpkin beers. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna start a brewery.
Are you?
I'm gonna call it Off Kilter.
Off Kilter. It's probably already a brewery, but anyway.
It probably is. I'm gonna put out Oktoberfests in March. I'm gonna put out pumpkin beers in June. Things that can be put out at other times of the year when they're not available anywhere else. I'm going to buck the system and put out seasonal beers at non-seasonal times, because someone will want that. Exactly. My box in November. There's enough of that fun seasonality, I'll say, in the brewing industry, that why isn't someone taking advantage of the ability to go off kilter or off schedule and put things out at the wrong time of year? If I walked into a package store in March and saw an Oktoberfest, my first thought would be, wow, that's old.
Right.
But if I took the time to look at it and realized, oh, they're doing an off-season Oktoberfest. Cool. I haven't had an Oktoberfest in 6 months. That sounds like just what I'm in the mood for. I would absolutely go for that. I would buy a pumpkin beer in June. I totally would.
Squash beer.
Squash. It'll be squash beer. Well, let's face it. You can't get a real pumpkin beer anyway.
No. Squash beer. You probably get a pumpkin beer at the end of November.
All of Mark's trying to help me like pumpkin beers. He's banging his head against the table right now going, what else can I do?
And nothing quenches the slakes a dry, parched throat of July like a barrel-aged Baltic porter.
Exactly. Things are all about being individual these days. Well, let's be completely individual and different. Let's say screw the seasonality and put this stuff out at various times when there is a glut in the, you know, not a glut. There's a drought in the marketplace for them. It's just my thought there. I'll bet there could be legs under that.
Reminds me of one of the common thread beers we did. And I remember this last one that I participated in years ago, but we are all these brewers and beer industry people sitting around a table deciding what kind of beer we're going to make. And this is one brewer that just absolutely demanded it was going to be a Baltic Porter. And this is for release in May. And I'm like, are you sure that's what you want to do? Absolutely. It's like, blah, blah, blah. There's no seasonality left in brewery anymore. X, Y, and Z. So they brewed a Baltic Porter and it was their worst selling beer.
Huh.
It was a good beer. Wrong time of year.
Yeah, but I think you play up that part of it.
Well, you could, and I think that's fun. Could you build a whole brewery around that, though?
Yeah, maybe not a whole brewery.
It could be like your rotational tap that you have. Like, hey, what's off kilter this month?
Yeah, who wants wit beer in January?
Woo-hoo. Yeah, it's a holiday spiced amber in August.
Mm-hmm. There are holidays in August. I'm sure there are.
Interesting. I like that idea.
Just came to me. Anyway, detoured from the topic.
We did.
Quite dramatically.
Right. So I think two things here. I like this topic. Again, it's very squishy. It's hard to get your hands around because there's so much variability in the data source. But I come back to what you were talking about, going to Reverie and, hey, you know, they basically track every beer you drink and your historic blood alcohol content level, but
and the color shirt I wear, which I find very odd. Course. I don't know why they need to know that every time.
There's probably some correlation between that and how often you're going to have a wit, but
maybe
what you are an outlier. They cannot base their forward plans on you because you are a regular, and unless you and your cadre of cronies make up the majority of their customer base, if they used you guys as their indicators, I don't think that's smart.
I'm going to agree and disagree with that. I'm relating this back to the pregnancy idea, which is that, yes, I'm an outlier in that not everyone's a regular. If you go back to the pregnancy example, not everyone's pregnant. They're the outliers, the pregnant people, but they use that stored data of the pregnant people to create a model to work for. How do we know if someone's about to be a pregnant person?
Okay.
So that's kind of what I'm saying here is use the data of the folks you've got who are your regulars. You model that, and can you apply it toward non-regulars in a way that makes sense if they do turn the corner to become a regular? What types of beers will they enjoy? Because these are what the people who show up every time have in combination.
But isn't that sort of like saying, how can I use my pregnancy data to sell shit to not pregnant people? What do they have to do with one another?
I'm using that data in order to be ready for when they become pregnant. So preparing for when those periodic visitors become regular visitors, and I'm already ready for them because I've got the selection they're going to want. You're not buying it.
I'm thinking about how does that help them? That works if the issue that they're trying to solve for, the variable that they're trying to solve for is, I want to turn more people into regulars. And this is what my regulars drink. So therefore I want to, what do I want to do? Do I want to make more of that style in order to But that doesn't take somebody who's coming into your bar that likes IPAs or fruited wits and turn them into a stout drinker if you make more stouts, because that's what your other regulars drink.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I'm looking at it more as identifying your customer types, I guess. Maybe I'm explaining it wrong. So yes, someone comes in and they're an IPA person. If you know historically from the people you can track, the folks that are your regulars, that those who drink IPAs also like your porter, which they won't because they're IPA people. But if you can cluster those beers together based on what you've seen your regulars do because you have your regulars' data, can't you apply that toward the person who walks in off the street?
If you assume that that person that walks in off the street is a representative sample of your population.
Correct.
But can you do that? Is that fair to do? Because you're basing it off, if you're using your regulars as a representation of the normal distribution, right, of mm-hmm. the whole spread of your consumer base, that's why I'm saying I don't think that's right. Because your regulars can skew that such that you were saying, okay, I'm going to base my assumptions on my regular consumers and take a look at my guy off the street as a random sample of the population and compare it to my standard consumer base.
You're saying they're fundamentally different customers.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
I can see your point, and you're not wrong. Okay, so look at it this way then. So maybe what has to happen is you've got your – because they do track on a tab, you know, what you've purchased and what you've had.
Yes.
I keep going back to combinations, to what people are drinking and repeatedly drinking.
Right.
So maybe this is really two separate streams of data, because just like they know that my bill was from a club member who's a repeat – offender, for lack of a better term.
Uh-huh.
They have plenty of invoices from folks that are not repeat offenders. Now, what they don't have is the continuum there of if they've been in here once before, what they get then, what did they come back for now? All they've got is a single bill of sale.
Exactly.
But if that single bill of sale has multiple drinks on it, and of course, we're then assuming that that single bill of sale is for one person drinking and not a table of four that one person paid for. Because that fucks the whole thing up, quite frankly.
True.
You can look at that differently, yes.
I am. That's exactly where my head is. I think they're two different streams. And if you mix them, your regulars' data is going to skew the general population.
Don't cross the streams.
So even if you've got a table of eight that you're buying for, and those people are not regulars, their consumption makes up part of the pattern of the whole population. So I think that's fine. So you'd be able to see, okay, let's say if on a Friday night I've got 300 people that come through and 40 of them are regulars and they all drank dark beer. So you've got a huge slug of dark beer consumption there that is potentially skewing the data of the population that drank IPAs. So if you took it all in aggregate and said, well, you know, where am I falling here? Am I an IPA house or am I a dark beer house or somewhere in between? I think you have to keep them separate, because you're going to want to cater to your regulars. You want to keep those people coming back.
Of course.
That's the goal, is to take these casual people and turn them into regulars. So you can look at those data, I think, and say, okay, this is what your regulars are drinking as a habit. And I can continue as a brewer to service their habit. I'm a dealer. I'm a drug dealer, right?
Of course, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. That's exactly what you are.
Right? How do I take those other people and turn them into regulars? I think that's a. I'm going off on a different track here.
But. Right. That's a bigger question, and not solvable with the internal data that you've got on a scale this small.
Right.
If we were on a look, back to the Target example. If we know that people who buy, they don't sell beer at Target, at least not at my Target.
In Wisconsin.
Oh, they do? Okay, then we'll use beer. If you've got examples of people who do and do not buy beer at Target in Wisconsin, well, the people who don't buy beer in Wisconsin don't belong in Wisconsin. Let's be fair about that.
That's totally fair.
But you can, because those are the same streams of data, the same type of customer, except for the beer differential, you can look for commonalities and figure out how to market to them. Mm-hmm. And I'll so let me throw another example from the pregnancy thing out there.
Okay.
This was interesting. Their next problem was, how do we market to people who we know are pregnant or we believe very strongly are pregnant, but they didn't tell us they're pregnant and probably would be upset to know that we have figured it out using math? So it's a fair concern.
Oh, math. Drat.
And what they decided to do, and this was very clever, I thought. So they the flyers you get in the mail, those even those catalogs, they are custom printed. They can be printed down to the person in terms of what is in there, what products are shown. And they toyed with, okay, we're going to send a catalog that is just diapers and, you know, all pregnancy clothes and all the stuff you would need. But it's, you know, they are going to be wrong sometimes. But more than that, when they're right and you're, I don't know, 13 weeks pregnant, and you haven't told your, you know, your extended family yet, and Target knows, you're going to be like, what the F is going on here? So what they do is they still send out these flyers, but they're more heavily peppered with the pregnancy stuff, but then they put next to it a lawnmower or like other things to make it look like it's a happy coincidence that all of this pregnancy stuff is on sale, when in fact it is extremely targeted. They're just trying to put a little smoke and mirrors around it. And I think that's fantastic. My point in bringing that up is, you know, how do you get someone to buy beer at Target when they don't? Well, look at everything else that person buys that's similar to what a beer – look at what a beer purchaser buys. And then market to the people that buy all of those same items in that same cadence, but without beer, and pepper their ads with beer. Hey, we sell beer too, and you look like a beer drinker to us.
Look at all those pretzels and Doritos you keep buying.
Yeah, and the extra, extra large T-shirts.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You're dip. Clearly
lots
a beer
of,
drinker,
lots
sir.
Of ranch. Lots of ranch. Lots of
ranch. Oh, we finally got a T-shirt line this week. Lots of ranch. Lots of ranch. Not even lots of ranch. Lots of ranch.
Lots of ranch. Yep. And no carrots.
That's one of those lines that in about 4 hours, it's just going to come back into. I'm going to start laughing for no reason. And one of my kids will be in the room and go, are you laughing at me? Like, no, I'm really not.
Yeah, no. Just your stupid uncle.
They know by now. If I say no, I'm laughing at something Uncle James said, they'll be like, oh, yeah, it was probably pretty funny.
Yeah, and inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you repeat it? Nope. Nope, can't do that.
Cannot.
Yeah, so that was the next thing they talked about, was this idea of how they market to them without telling them they're marketing to them, which I thought was interesting. And of course, look, Reverie, my local place, their beer is sold in certain supermarkets in the area. Those supermarkets know what beer is selling. They're probably using it more along the lines of, do I continue to buy beer from this vendor, as opposed to, I can advertise that beer to the Cheetos population.
No, they are looking at the, and I know this as a fact, at least in Wisconsin, the retailers I know, they are looking purely at trailer indicators. They're looking at what SKUs are moving, and that determines actually where they get placed on the shelf. So it's a self-defeating thing. So if you have a bad month moving, let's say you do put out your merits in May. Don't. Besides Greg going in there and buying it, nobody else is buying it. So that SKU movement is going to be low, and it's going to get de-emphasized in that shelf space. It's going to get pushed over into a corner, and that pushes down, potentially, most likely, pushes down sales for that brewery in terms of the eyes of, because they group usually all those beers together from the same brewery. And now that, because that brewer made one bad decision about a release for a beer type at the wrong time, devalued their position on the shelf, and they're got a hole to work out of big time.
Yep.
And it's like, and you don't get many chances at this. And I've had brewer friends tell me this. They're just like, that the retail shelf space industry is brutal, cutthroat.
Oh yeah. The cost of being on an end cap and all that. I mean, it's a huge, there's a ton of science involved in supermarkets, right on down to, I mean, I took classes on queuing theory back in school, on lines and all that. It's incredible stuff.
I think about how you know, if we pull this back to the overall topic, and we look at how do these small breweries, distributing or otherwise, make use of this concept. I don't know, but what I think is probably the more crucial question here is how many of them actually understand their consumer base.
I agree. I think, and it's underscored by what they told me the other day and said, oh, you know, we've got a pretty uniform customer base. Do you really know that?
Right. Show me.
Yeah, show me. There are two breweries in my town, and I have very infrequently frequented the other one. It's just, I just like the one I go to more. But people have preferences for a reason. They go to one or the other. There has to be some sort of a dividing line and some sort of a customer base that is well represented at each of those places and underrepresented. And that's opportunity.
Right. And how do you make the decision to go after, to influence any one of those, whether you want to de-emphasize or emphasize it, bring more in or have less of that? That's a whole other discussion, I think. But
it is.
I just think that brewers are faced with so much data coming at them that has a potential to be heavily mined, but that takes effort and money, and most of them are just trying to keep the lights on. But can you afford to not do it?
Right. We very rarely know.